Fighting fire with fire. Elise Stefanik not holding back, saying she wants a full investigation of Jack Smith and whether or not he's actually engaging in what you could call election interference. I think so. We're going to talk all about it. Welcome to the show, everyone. I am Trish Regan. It is terrific to have you here. I want to welcome you back. And I also want to take you right outside the courtroom. Just earlier today, Donald Trump speaking, and he's slamming the entire thing. I believe he used the word scam, hoax, and a few other things. Listen.
They took me off the campaign trail, but the good news is my poll numbers are the highest they've ever been, so at least we're getting the word out. And everybody knows this trial is a scam. It's a scam. The judge should be recused, and he should recuse himself today.
Yeah. So he's not too happy. He's not too happy. But you know what? Why should he be? Honestly, like, this has been quite a disaster from the get-go, one thing after another. And all of these people, whether you're talking about Alvin Bragg, whether you're talking about Jack Smith, or you're talking about Fannie Willis, any of them, all of them, oh, how can I forget Letitia James? They all have something in common, and that is that they are out to get Trump no matter what. And in fact, they even ran on it in the case of Letitia James, for sure. Alvin Bragg at one point didn't think he could bring a case. Well, there he is, lo and behold. Just months ahead of the election, keeping Donald Trump, the GOP candidate for the president of the United States, held up in court 4 out of 5 days a week. So therefore, he cannot campaign. But that's not stopping him, as he points out over and over again. Let's listen again to Donald Trump.
The whole thing is a hoax. All of them are hoaxes, including the civil cases. They're controlled by the White House. They're controlled by Democrat judges and prosecutors that were put there specifically. They hate Trump. And the people are getting it. That's why we just came out. A new Emerson poll just was released about 2 minutes ago. And I'm leading by a lot in every swing state and leading in the general election. And you saw the CNN poll. I'm sure they aren't too happy with it. But the CNN poll was fantastic. So we're here. This is a hoax. This is a judge who's conflicted. Badly, badly, badly conflicted. I've never seen a judge so conflicted. And giving us virtually no rulings. I hear I'm not even allowed to say advice of counsel. This is a new one to me, advice of counsel. When you have a lawyer and the lawyer does something or advises you on something, you say advice of counsel. He said you're not allowed to say that. And so you'll all figure it out. But I think the public has figured it out because the poll numbers are the highest they've ever been.
I do believe that just cost him $9,000. So Judge Merchan, you know, put on a restraining order and said, you can't say anything. Well, that really hasn't stopped Donald Trump from saying things. And so the tally keeps ticking forward. I mean, of course, it's only $1,000. I think he can handle it. I mean, Letitia had him for what? Nearly $500 million, which got whittled down to $175 million. You know, this is something else. So I think he can handle the $9K. It's worth it for him to be able to go out and speak his mind. And he's using that as an opportunity every single morning to get out there and speak to the American people. The American people are looking at this saying, oh my gosh, like they just keep throwing stuff. And so far anyway, nothing sticks. And increasingly now it looks as though the Supreme Court is going to vote, hell yeah, he's got some immunity. And this is going to be a landmark case for presidents to come, which, you know, when you think about it, I want to go to Stephen Miller because he pointed out, actually, he was on just before me the other day on Newsmax. So I was watching this in real time and I was like, oh, we got to get that clip. So sure enough, my team got the clip. Here's Stephen Miller laying it all out there, explaining to my good friend Chris Salcedo just exactly what this means. If you don't have immunity, this is why it's so important. Watch.
If DOJ goes down this road, let's be clear about what will happen. If they said there's no immunity for official acts, the moment Joe Biden leaves office, every single red city and red state DA in the country can charge him for financial crimes related to illegal student loan bailouts, can charge him for war crimes related to deaths of service members overseas, can charge him for human trafficking, human smuggling, and by the way, more election interference than you can even count. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of indictments for election interference would all be possible by any red state DA, any red state prosecutor, any conservative DA anywhere in the country. That would be the future that they would be creating if they were to accept Dreeben's argument.
Yep, and it would rip this country apart.
So, in other words, think about the scenario you're setting up, right? A highly, highly, highly politicized scenario. Clearly, we're living in a very, very political world right now. And that's in part why you have 91 counts against the former president. How dare he come back for more? How dare he come back for four more years? And so Elise Stefanik, the congresswoman from New York, who's increasingly becoming a superstar, don't forget, she's the one that took down Claudine Gay at Harvard University, who's no longer president there at Harvard University, thanks to some of the stupid things that she said while speaking with Representative Stefanik. Well, Representative Stefanik, she's no joke. She's, by the way, a Harvard Law School student graduate herself. She is now demanding an investigation into Jack Smith and exactly what motivated him, not to mention all the concerns that she has, that I have, Stephen Miller has, and I know you have, about, well, shall we say, the bias of some of these judges, including the judge who's deciding the case with Alvin Bragg right now, Judge Merchan in New York City, Juan Merchan, who has a daughter who runs some $93 million through her business working for the likes of Adam Schiff. Okay, the Schiff Show back in town. That's all I needed to hear. Anyway, let's listen right now to Elise Stefanik, who's filing paperwork right now, as we speak, demanding this investigation. Here we go.
We are now in week three of Alvin Bragg's witch hunt, the first criminal trial of a former president of the United States. It is crystal clear from the opening arguments and evidence that this extraordinarily weak case is blatant lawfare and election interference during the height of the presidential campaign. While the violent crime crisis rages in New York, Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg brought bogus felony charges against President Trump for the non-felony of booking a 2017 nuisance claim as a legal expense. Under this bogus legal theory, this somehow impacted the election. This theory is so baseless that it was previously passed over by the prior Manhattan DA, the Manhattan U.S. Attorney, the Federal Election Commission, and Alvin Bragg himself. But a top political appointee in the Biden Justice Department was deployed to Bragg's office to go after Joe Biden's top political opponent and the Republican nominee, Donald J. Trump. And the case is in front of the Democrat judge, Juan Merchan, who donated to Biden's campaign and whose daughter is raising tens of millions off this unprecedented case. This is corrupt election interference to its core. Even a former Clinton federal judge said Judge Merchan must recuse. What was Merchan's response? He retaliated against President Trump with an unconstitutional gag order. Last week, the House Judiciary Committee, under the leadership of Chairman Jim Jordan, released a scathing report highlighting Bragg's political investigation and prosecution of President Trump, calling it a direct threat to our republic. Democrats' corrupt and desperate witch hunts against President Trump must come to an end. This is lawfare and blatant election interference. And the American people know it. That is why today I filed an official complaint with the Department of Justice Office of Professional Responsibility on Joe Biden's special counsel Jack Smith for his clear and illegal efforts of election interference. We will fight the Democrats' unjust lawfare and expose this corruption, whether it is in New York, Atlanta, or here in Washington, D.C. This is an important responsibility of our oversight.
Wow. Okay, so she's not messing around. I mean, think about already what's happened in terms of Jack Smith. Here, by the way, is some of the paperwork that she just filed. Elise Stefanik taking this case, you know, to the upper echelons here. But it's not easy, right? Because if you've got a seemingly corrupt DOJ, like, how do you fight back against that? I guess that's when you wind up in the Supreme Court. What's amazing is that already just the little bits and pieces that have come forward, they have not been successful with. I mean, think about it. They've just not been successful. And it looks increasingly like the Supreme Court is not going to go with putting people behind bars for 20 years because of their protests there. Incidentally, there was just a protest today. Oh, yes, the pro-Palestinian protesters decided to barge in on Capitol Hill. There was a hearing going on with Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, and they marched in and they disturbed the peace and they disturbed the hearing. Well, you know, the Supreme Court justices are saying, so wait a second, like anytime you disturb some kind of federal procedure, if that's a litmus test, then, well, you know, a lot of people will go away for a while, right? I mean, hey, what about Bowen? Representative Bowen, the fire alarm guy, right? He actually knowingly, willingly, I mean, that one's really bad. He definitely deserves to go away for a good long time. He went and pulled the fire alarm. We got the video of it. He did this even knowing there was a sign that said the alarm would go off. He pulled the fire alarm because he didn't want the budget vote to go on. This is a representative, ladies and gentlemen, Jamal Bowman from New York. I mean, really, really shoddy behavior. But that shows you what you're up against right now. It really does in every way. And yet, I think when push comes to shove, it will be the Supreme Court that happens to be the adults, plural, in the room. And consequently, all this will have been for naught. But what did they do? They wasted our time and they interfered with the election in the process. So Elise Stefanik, some very, very good ground to stand on. Here, I want to show you a clip from Laura Ingraham's show over at Fox. She was speaking with somebody who was formerly on the Trump legal team, who also was making the point that there's nothing there. What are they prosecuting there in New York City with Alvin Bragg?
The media doesn't focus on what, if any, crime there is here. They're salacious details, some of them, and they're very interesting to some people. But you asked, how could the case get this far? The answer to that is Judge Merchan. No normal judge would allow this case to go forward, just as the DA's office didn't think it should go forward when Mark Pomerantz presented it. The question is, do we really believe that for a candidate to want to either pay extortion money or hide some fact that may be unpleasant from the public, that that's really election interference? But the problem is we don't even know what they claim the charge is. We don't necessarily even get to the misdemeanor because that requires an intent to defraud with the way the thing was booked. You can be sure President Trump didn't direct how this was to be booked. But if you got to that, they then have to prove that he did that with the intent to commit some other crime. Without the grand jury ever charging what that other crime is, it's impossible to defend. Let's say through this witness, it's to cover up some salacious fact to help himself in the election. But another witness says, well, it's really a campaign finance violation. And another one says, no, it's really a tax violation. A defendant doesn't have to hit a moving target all of the time. I think today's testimony perfectly highlights what many of the problems are with this case. And by the way, would it be to advance a campaign if someone plagiarized and then covered that up? Or if somebody ruined a server that might have had embarrassing details on it and emails on it to promote a candidacy, would those be illegal? Were they ever charged against any other candidate?
Did you get the sense that they're just kind of almost giving up over at the law practice of Never Trump LLC? I mean, this today really kind of took the cake for me.
They never give up, Laura, and they never will give up, no matter how many times they're slapped down. There was nothing in today's testimony that changed the underlying legal problems that I think Bragg is going to have, or that changes the key facts in the case. And the key problem is, it's not illegal, as you pointed out, it's not illegal to pay somebody money to catch and kill a story. It's not illegal to reimburse a publisher who pays that money. To convict Trump under the latest esoteric theory, you have to show that he conspired to promote his own election by unlawful means. But as we have pointed out, it is not, apparently the theory is the unlawful means was that they didn't report this, or they were trying to stop from reporting this as a federal campaign expenditure. But as we know, that is actually
okay, so I'm just going to jump in. So the point is, they have no case. Okay, they have no case. But you know what, guys? It doesn't matter to them. It doesn't matter. You understand? Because there's election interference going on. It doesn't matter if there's no case. The whole thing could be a facade, a mirage, because all they want to do is hold him up every day in court so that he can't campaign. He can't campaign. He can't be out there in Wisconsin, in Michigan, in those swing states, doing what he needs to do. But you know what? Doesn't seem to matter. Doesn't seem to matter because guess what? You just look at that CNN poll and he's killing it. He's way up in all of those states. I think every single swing state except for one right now, Michigan, where RFK is still making some hay. But I'm telling you, they can do this all they want. Ultimately, I do believe it backfires against the Democrats, because Americans are looking at this and saying, you know what, this is not fair. I mean, Donald Trump has told me himself, I asked him, like, why didn't you ever go after Hillary Clinton? Why didn't you put her behind bars? I was just curious, right? Because he kept saying that on the campaign trail. And he said, you know, Trish, like, I just thought about it. And like, this is America still, right? We're America. We don't do that kind of thing. That's like very Banana Republic-esque. And I think about that a lot because he told me that back, I want to say like 2017, 2018. And here we are in 2024. And they're doing their darndest to put him behind bars. So, yeah, if he comes back, you know, he might have an axe to burn. People are starting to get worried. You see the cover of Time magazine today, you know, complete with the devil ears and everything. They're working that one again. And the sort of gist of the article is, I was too nice last time. Drew, do we have that? This is fantastic because, they have to work their little devil ears. And it's a, if he wins. And then the whole article, I guess at some point they quote him and they say, he says, I was too nice last time. They're not nice. Let's be very clear. They are not nice. And they will stop at nothing. But as Stephen Miller warned us earlier on, look, the tables could turn. They could go after, Republicans could go after Joe Biden and say, hey, that was fraudulent what you did with that student loan money. That was actually against the Supreme Court ruling. I want that money back. That was fraudulent what you did using my taxpayer dollars to fly illegal migrants to cities all over America without even telling anyone, without telling me. I didn't approve that. Congress didn't approve that. You know, he could be in trouble for a whole lot of things. And I think he knows it. I think his son knows it, too. And that's why they're going on the offensive. I have an update on Hunter Biden suing Fox News. But before I get to that, I want to tell you about a new sponsorship, a new partnership I am so happy to have embarked upon. This is with a new gold company. Some of you guys were talking about gold just the other day. We've been watching gold prices hovering around $2,300 an ounce, really just hovering near those all-time highs right now. What I tell you, I've been telling you forever to buy it. Not that I'm somebody who believes in ever getting in or out. I mean, gold is one of those things I do think that you should hold on to. Really hold on to, because look, you never know what's going on these days. We got a lot of stuff happening. We got a lot of debt, $43 trillion and counting, and it's alarming. I don't know what the upshot of that is eventually. I mean, you look at all these BRIC countries right now. By the way, it's American Heart for Gold. Just want to give them a plug. I'm actually going to put, if it's not already in there, I'm going to put their URL there. Actually, specifically the one that is going to give you a great deal that I'll tell you about in just a second. But American Heart for Gold is the company that I've partnered with. We've talked a lot about this, you guys. There's a lot of countries that would like to replace the U.S. dollar, right? They want the yuan, for example, in China to be the be-all, end-all. A lot of these BRIC countries, I used to trade them, specifically Latin American countries, when I started Goldman Sachs, a lot of these BRIC countries, guess what? They would love to be involved in something other than the U.S. dollar. However, I just got to caution. Like, really? You want to go and be in the Chinese yuan? I don't think so. And so what do you see them doing? They're buying gold. They're buying gold because, no, they don't want to be in the Chinese yuan. And, you know, the cryptocurrency stuff, it's interesting, but it's not there yet. And so consequently, you see all over the world, increasingly central banks, including from emerging market countries, now buying gold, which is helping to drive the price up. But at 76 Research, the company I co-founded with Rob Horton, who's going to be on the show in just a little bit, actually coming up a little bit later, we can talk some more about gold with him. He and I were looking at this, and I just want to show you this chart. Drew, if you have this chart, because it's sort of looking at the value of gold relative to the overall market. Actually, not that one. We'll get to that one later. That's also interesting because you get some copper and some other things in there. But we've got a great, there we go. Gold versus the monetary base. See, I think this is really important to look at because you know they've been printing money like there's no tomorrow, right? Like they've been printing. The printing's up just some 40% in that COVID period alone. That's what they call the M2 money supply. So they flooded the market with dollars, and that's the monetary base. Well, look at gold like back in the day. You know, people are like, gosh, you know, is it going to continue at this level? And, you know, the real answer is, I don't know. Nobody knows. But I think you can take some comfort in this chart because when I look at gold and I look at it, say, in 2011 versus the monetary base, there's a big spread there, right? So there wasn't as much cash in circulation, and yet gold prices were really high. Now, if you look at it nowadays, it's starting to level out. So it's actually, we're in a situation now where you actually see gold more reflective of what the monetary base is. So if we're to assume that they're going to keep on printing, and you know they will. I mean, they just can't wait to. I don't think they're going to be able to do another cut. I think it's going to be hard, but they want to. and precedent calls for it ahead of an election, by they I mean the Federal Reserve, then that could actually mean that you are going to see a continuation of gold prices moving higher. We shall see. I make no promises, but it is fascinating to watch, and I love this chart because it helps to explain a lot. Here's the good news. I'm teaming with American Heart for Gold, and one of the reasons I wanted to do this, other than some of my friends that I used to work with, Bill O'Reilly's with them, Lou Dobbs, et cetera, one of the reasons I wanted to do this was because of what they offer you, which is, dun-da-da, $15,000 of free silver on your first order with them if you use the link that I'm including for you. I think Bill's picture's on it, so ignore that for now. We'll make sure that my picture comes up. Or you could call him. Then you can really make sure you get this $15,000 of free silver on your first order. Just call 1-844-495-1115. It's 1-844-495-1115. Or text Trish, my name, T-R-I-S-H, to 655-32. I'll put all of this in the show notes that you see it, because why not get $15,000 in free silver, right? So Trish, 655-32. You can text my name to 655-32. Anyway, we're going to talk about gold a little bit later on in the show. In the meantime, let's get back to the news that boy, oh boy, Hunter Biden, he thinks the answer somehow is to just be more like Trump. He's going to go on the offensive and somehow sue everybody, including Fox News, because how dare you report, frankly, the truth, right? I mean, gosh, the New York Post, they got their Twitter account shut down. Remember that one? Because they dared to report the truth. You just weren't allowed. Well, Fox has been reporting actually a lot of truth. I know the reporter that works for digital that's doing a lot of this incredible reporting, and she's broken a ton of news, Brooke Singram. And for some reason, Hunter's taken aim at Fox News Digital and Fox News, and he's saying it's malicious, et cetera, it's exaggerated. And so he's suing. We brought you this news just yesterday, but just to keep you up to speed, I want you to hear it again. Hits, runs, and errors, courtesy of MSNBC. They're psyched about this. Watch.
ABC News has learned that Hunter Biden is planning to sue Fox News. According to a letter from his lawyers, the lawsuit is imminent. NBC's Ryan Nobles joins me now. Ryan, what more can you tell us?
Yeah, that's right, Chris. This is a letter obtained by NBC's Sarah Fitzpatrick that comes from the new attorney that Hunter Biden has entered into a contract with, and that's famed entertainment lawyer Mark Garagos. And in this letter, he sends a warning to the Fox News Corporation and Fox News Digital that they are preparing to sue the company for what they describe as conspiracy and subsequent actions to defame Mr. Biden and paint him in a false light, as well as the unlicensed commercial exploitation of his image, name, and likeness, and the unlawful publication of hacked intimate images of him. And this, of course, stems from the fact that, of course, Hunter Biden has been in the news quite a bit over the past couple of years because of his legal issues. And then, of course, the broad impeachment inquiry that's taking place by the House of Representatives. And essentially what Garagos is arguing in this letter, it's actually a member of his legal team is arguing in this letter, is that Fox is unfairly and libelously attacking Hunter Biden when there are no merits to many of the claims that they've been making about him. Now, this, of course, comes at the same time that Hunter Biden is facing legal issues of his own. He is on the verge of facing two different criminal trials, one in Delaware on a gun charge, another separate criminal trial in California that's related to tax issues. Both of those trials came as a result of a plea deal with the federal government that fell apart. So this is Hunter Biden going on the offensive. Of course, he is a favorite topic of Fox News, often brought up over and over again. And what is detailed in this letter is how they used many of the images that came from that so-called laptop that was discovered in the midst of the 2020 campaign that had a number of compromising and questionable and somewhat lewd images of Hunter Biden that have been used over and over again on Fox News. The argument here is that they were obtained illegally. They should not have been used in a form such as this. And also, they're his property, and they're arguing that Fox News was using them inappropriately. So we'll have to see where this comes. Again, this isn't the actual filing of a lawsuit yet, Chris. This is just a threat to file
they're
a lawsuit.
They're just going to do it. So it's like a warning, right? He's warning Fox News, don't you dare. and don't use those images anymore. I mean, the images, that's actually kind of an interesting case, right? Because does he own them after that laptop became part of the public domain? And let's not forget, like, Hunter is a public person, so he has to expect a certain amount of pushback. Then again, like, if the images were on his laptop, believe me, you don't want to see them, but they've been everywhere. New York Post, Daily Mail, Fox, whatever. We've seen a few too many things that we can't unsee, ladies and gentlemen. So does he have a case there? Maybe. But, you know, he's going to have to go after everyone else, too, I would think, theoretically. Why is he singling out Fox? Well, he hates Fox. And you know what? He's got MSNBC doing his bidding. Of course, they do all the Biden's bidding. That's what they do, including his little pal Joe over there on the morning show. Just listen to them this morning talking about this.
There has been this obsession with Hunter Biden, not just on the far right, but by truth tellers, so-called truth tellers. We're just going to tell the truth. And the media, the mainstream, the dominant media doesn't want to talk about Hunter Biden. And what about this person? An international fugitive, it ends up. What about that person? You know, a guy who's just making stuff up. And what we have at the end of all of this is James Comer making a total fool of himself. The Republican committee making a total fool of themselves, these news outlets making a total fool of themselves, and they have just lied over and over and over about him. And I will say there is this push-pull. People inside the White House don't want Hunter Biden doing this. I'm not talking about Joe Biden, but Joe Biden's aides don't want him doing this because they think it distracts from the campaign. But I completely understand Hunter Biden saying, enough is enough. You can only lie about me so long, and then I'm coming after you.
Oh, you understand. You understand, right? Look, I mean, the guy's part of the news story, right? And we're in the news business. And what's amazing is that so many people were choosing not to report on any of this. And part of making sure that you have a free press and that we have open dialogue and making sure that people know about things is that, yes, it gets reported on. So I've actually reported on it. I have not used the images. Thank you very much. But I've reported on it a lot because I think it's actually worth reporting. When you understand the deal that they were trying to do, right, in the 11th hour, there and finally a judge stands up and says, gee, I don't think I can really sign off on this. When you look at the coziness between Hunter Biden having an $83,000 a month gig on a board of a company with an industry that he knew nothing, literally nothing about, yet his dad happened to be running the policy at the time for that particular country and was therefore controlling the purse strings. I mean, to me, I'm sorry, it's a story and it's well worth reporting on. And yet Hunter Biden wants to sue you for doing that, or at least Fox News. I mean, what have we come to, really? What have we come to? It's quite concerning. You know, this is important to think about. What have we come to? I mean, if in fact you can't report on Hunter Biden because, well, and by the way, you know, it's a free country. I guess anybody can sue anybody. But I think it's more than that. I remember, for example, when Biden first came to office, I mean, there were edicts that went out. There were edicts that were certainly far different, right, than anything that we ever saw under the Trump administration. And so when people talk about, oh, he's going to shut down, Trump is going to shut down freedom of the press, you're not going to have any real conversations or any real discourse. Let me just remind you. I mean, for example, you had some really ruckus press conferences. Remember Jim Acosta? That's how he made his name. Like, he was pretty forthcoming. If we lived in an environment, ladies and gentlemen, where the president was actually shutting off the other side, you wouldn't have had that discord. You wouldn't have had all the vitriol coming out of MSNBC on a regular basis. It just wouldn't have existed. And so for them to sit there and say, okay, well, we think he's going to shut off freedom of the press, I'm telling you, they're smoking something. At least now it's legal, right? We're going to get to that story later on. Marijuana legalized. They were trying to legalize it, this administration. We knew it was coming at some point, but there's a lot of political reasons why they're doing it right now. Anyway, there's an anchor over on MSNBC that you've probably never heard of, unless you used to be sort of knee deep in Republican politics, because she used to be a Republican consultant. She and Sarah Palin allegedly didn't get along so well. Anyway, she once had a stint on The View. She seems to have found a little home for herself over on MSNBC. She's actually a terrible broadcaster. I mean, I can say that as a broadcaster. Broadcaster to broadcaster, lady, you suck. She's a terrible broadcaster, has no personality, but she keeps going back over some of the same themes over and over and over again, which, as you can imagine, are all really anti-Trump. So she doesn't have the morning show. She doesn't have the evening show. She's kind of stuck in the middle of daytime where nobody's really watching. I don't know how her ratings are, but it's no man's land. So you probably don't know who she is. But let me share a clip with you of her. She is so worried that Donald Trump might actually win again because she's seen these polls and that she's somehow going to lose her show and be kicked off the air, to which I'd say, yeah, maybe because you suck. Excuse my French, not actually because of anything that Trump is going to do to you, lady. Watch.
I've seen that toast a bunch of times, but it landed very differently this year. Because depending on what happens in November, 7 months from right now, this time next year, I might not be sitting here. I might not be a White House correspondents dinner or a free press. While our democracy wouldn't exactly fall apart immediately without it, the real threat looms larger. A candidate with outward disdain, not just for a free press, but for all of our freedoms and for the rule of law itself.
Oh, woe is me, huh? She, sight for sore eyes, as my grandmother would say. Anyway, this woman is worried somehow that Trump is going to kick her off the air. So I guess this is a ratings ploy. It must be a ratings ploy because she needs viewers. And so she, I don't know, maybe, you know, Rachel left. Maybe she's given lessons or consulting things, you know, on the side. She's teaching her, here's what you do. Here's how you do it. Because it almost seemed to be channeling some of that Rachel Maddow syncopation in the voice, if you would. Anyway, she's not going to lose her job if Donald Trump were to be reelected, but she might lose her job just because she's not very good at what she does. Dare I say, right? Her name is, forgive me. Okay. I'm not, there's my lacking as a broadcaster, Wallace, last name Wallace. Okay. Turning now back to how this sort of overall caricature of Donald Trump is now evolving. I mean, take a look at this, guys. I want you to see again, this picture on Time magazine. So Nicole's out there. There, see, it came to me. Her first name is Nicole. Nicole's out there saying, oh, I'm going to lose my job if he wins. He's so bad. He's going to be awful for the country. You get Time magazine painting in the devil ears again. And then you get Joe Biden, who actually seems to be channeling the devil himself in this clip I'm about to show you, complete with the red lights and everything. I don't know who in the White House thought that was a good idea. I mean, couldn't they use blue? Anyway, he's seeming rather devil-like, dare I say, in this clip, telling you how bad you are if you support MAGA policies. Watch them.
Too much of what's happening in our country today is not normal. Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundations of our republic. Now, I want to be very clear up front. Not every Republican, not even the majority of Republicans, are MAGA Republicans. Not every Republican embraces their extreme ideology. I know, because I've been able to work with these mainstream Republicans. But there's no question that the Republican Party today is dominated, driven, and intimidated by Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans. And that is a threat to this country. These are hard things. But I'm an American president, not a president of red America, blue America, but of all America. And I believe it's my duty to level with you, to tell the truth, no matter how difficult, no matter how painful. And here, in my view, is what is true. MAGA Republicans do not respect the Constitution. They do not believe in the rule of law. They do not recognize the will of the people. They refuse to accept the results of a free election. And they're working right now, as I speak, in state after state,
okay,
to give power to the...
blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know how the rest goes, right? This is kind of like an infamous speech that he gave, complete with the red lights. Where again, it really seemed like he, Joe Biden, was channeling the devil himself. They all hate him. You know, here's the thing, guys. They don't have anything to fire back against the former president with because, hey, the economy was doing better. I mean, can we pull out the inflation chart again? Drew knows where I'm going with this because I'll tell you, energy prices were a whole lot better. Egg prices, they're 50% more now under this president. Your rents are up 66%. That's not actually, mortgages are up 66% on average. Rents are up 22%. That's not in this chart. Transportation's up 32.5% under Biden. I mean, we have some cumulative inflation here that's kind of a problem when you think about it. And so, sure, you know, Hillary Clinton can say they're the deplorables. And Joe Biden can say, you're awful because MAGA is awful, all of it. And then the reality is we actually seemed as though we were in a far more stable place. When you consider the latest poll numbers showing that this president is in the worst place of any president in some 70 years, I think that tells you a lot. And I think that Democrats would be smart to actually adhere to Jamie Dimon, CEO of JP Morgan Chase's advice and say, you know what, you can't just cancel half the population. You can't cancel half the people in this country out. It's not going to happen. We've got a lot more to discuss on this topic, including what's happening at Columbia University, my alma mater. Let me just show you some of that video right now. And maybe Rob, as he joins us, he'd be willing to comment because it's also his own as well. This is, you can see, let's turn up the volume for a second. This is last night at Hamilton Hall at Columbia University, where students took over Hamilton Hall. And they have since renamed it, they say, in honor of one of the kids who has died in Gaza. Anyway, it's turning into quite a you-know-what storm there at Columbia, and it's really rather remarkable that the president of the university was not able to handle this in a better fashion earlier on. She did tell them that they had to be off campus or that they would be expelled or suspended, and that was, well, what, last week? And she didn't follow through with that. And, you know, when you tell the kids bedtime's at 8:30 and then suddenly it becomes 8:45 and 9 and 9:15, well, then the kids have a lot of runway, shall we say. Anyway, as we talk about the economic challenges in this country, there's still opportunity out there. And I think it's important for everybody to remember that. I'd love to welcome at this moment into the conversation my colleague, the co-founder of 76 Research. That would be Rob Horton. Rob, welcome. Good to have you back on the show. You and I talk every day. We've been, of course, you know, I just curious to get your thoughts on Columbia right now. Princeton University apparently has arrested some 11 students. I think that they're looking to suspend them as well. Princeton, where I also know you went to school, not messing around with any of this. Is there a difference at all before we get into all the economic stuff, just the, in terms of what you see, in terms of how the administration there at Princeton University, your alma mater for your undergrad, and Columbia, where you did your MBA, how they're responding to the situation?
Yeah. Hey, Trish, great to be with you. Princeton has, you know, President Eisgruber is really responding very, very quickly to this. He was very clear that, you know, none of this stuff would be tolerated. The encampments violate, I think, what they call time and place restrictions, right? So, you know, he's a constitutional scholar. He's a defender of free speech, but he also understands that this is completely antithetical to free speech. So I'm pretty impressed with the way he kind of snuffed this out from the beginning. And I think maybe you were just alluding to with the bedtime analogy. You know, you let these things kind of, you let these transgressions occur and you give an inch. And then next thing you know, you're in this appeasement mode. So it's very disheartening to see what's happening on Columbia's campuses. As a graduate of that,
And campuses all across the country right now. I mean, it's really Northwestern apparently really given in with some the demands that the protesters have been making. But you know, as as challenging as this particular moment in time is, I mean, one of the things that people always need to remember, I think, is that there's still opportunity out there. I talk about it a lot in terms of personal responsibility, something that you and I both believe in wholeheartedly. And it's one of the reasons why I encourage people to make sure that they invest. It's one of the reasons we founded 76 Research, because we wanted to make sure that people had this sort of conflict-free zone where they could learn about where to invest, how to invest. And I want to do what we call a shameless plug, because one of the very first stocks that you and I recommended in the 76 report, and people can go to 76report.com or 76research.com, this particular stock has been on an absolute tear. And I think Drew has a, do you have the chart? Because I just want to show versus the S&P. The S&P's like basically gone nowhere. It's actually down 0.2%. But our pick, the 76 report pick, is up 13.6%. Now, Rob and I are not like in and out of stocks. It's just that we felt that this was a really good opportunity to buy this particular company at that particular level. And sure enough, we were right. 13.6% of an uptick. So that's pretty exciting. A lot of that has to do with sort of the commodity sector, if you would, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So that was a mid-March stock that we profiled in the 76 report. And it was a commodity stock that we felt was, you know, sort of an opportune time. That's kind of our approach to the 76 report, right, is to kind of, you know, we have several, about 30, 40 stocks across our model portfolios. And then when we see an interesting entry point, that gives rise to, you know, an occasion to kind of highlight it in the 76 report. But, you know, it's interesting. I mean, today it's been a, you know, it's the end of the month. It's been a difficult month. The inflation problem continues to persist and really flare up. Today, we had another problematic data point, the ECI, the Employment Cost Index, that came in hotter than expected, 1.2%, which was like the hottest level for the quarter since the first quarter of last year. So that's a...
All right, let me jump in and just explain, right, for people, help them understand what that means, because it's another indication of inflation. And we might say, oh, well, you know, at least... hopefully people are making more. This is an employment cost indication, right? Like an index. So maybe people are making more, but I think the flip side of that is that it's now embedded, right? Like we can just assume there's more and more and more inflation coming in to the equation. And once it's there, it doesn't really go away.
Yeah. And this is wages and benefits. So yeah, you could, the silver lining is that people are getting paid more, but you can kind of also read into it as, you know, at a 4.8% pace, this is like the stickier piece of that inflation puzzle. And, you know, you're targeting 2 to 2.5% long-term inflation rates, but here we have wages kind of, and benefits kind of sticking, you know, at almost 5%. We're not really getting there. And I think that's signaling, you know, the market's acceptance that we're potentially entering a kind of a new regime of structurally higher inflation rates. And we see that in 10-year treasury yields, they're pushing 4.7 again. They were 4.2% at the beginning of the month. They were 3.9% at the beginning of the year. And, you know, the outlook for rate cuts is kind of evaporating before our eyes. So inflation is here, embedded, you know, inflation expectations, forward expectations are drifting up. And it's a headwind for, certainly a headwind for bonds. It's been a headwind for the S&P 500, down 4% in April. And, you know, but there are winners. Those are the ones that we try to identify in the inflation protection model portfolio. Gold is up something like 15% over the last 2 months, and copper is up north of 20%. That's a theme that we've been highlighting. And, you know,
we got a great chart for that too. I actually jumped the gun and showed this by mistake a little bit earlier in the program. But Drew, if you still have that chart, we were looking at commodities earlier and you could see copper, for example, gold, I mean, really just all on a tear. Forgive me, that's gold versus the monetary base, which is an excellent chart. Excellent chart. We can talk about that too. But this one right here, you know, Rob, walk us through this. I mean, you've got gold, you've got copper, and then you've got basically, you know, the bond ETF, and the S&P 500, and you can see like the copper and gold are way outpacing what the overall market or treasuries would be doing right now.
Yep. So this is that chart shows the past 2 months, and you know, you've got this kind of increase in those two commodities, and you know, just the headwinds from rising inflation and rising interest rates, you know, bringing down stock market valuations and certainly bringing down treasury valuations. It's interesting. Question that I have is really, does the Fed have the tools to get the inflation problem under control? And this is something we talked about in the 76 report in the most recent issue. You know, there's this idea that, you know, you hike rates and that's that. And then all of a sudden we'll be back to 2% inflation and it's normalized. It doesn't seem to be working. And I think, it raises a lot of questions that people have been raising. Do interest rate hikes really even get the job done, or are our problems more structural in nature and more on the supply side and the cost side? So that's kind of where we get into this idea of structural inflation, that it's almost beyond the reach of, or beyond the realm of control of the Fed to really get a handle on.
Right. No, I think that's the fear right now. You've basically got this embedded into the economy, and it's the runaway train. I just wanted to open it up because we have so many people watching right now, and I think a lot of people have questions. And I just thought, since we have you here, it might be worthwhile to actually entertain some of those questions. So, again, this is a live show. I just want to remind you, thank you. Make sure you subscribe here to the channel. We're live here every single day. Make sure you go over and you subscribe to the 76 Report. We have model portfolios there as well, where you can really help to, you know, as Rob talks about inflation, as we talk about sort of all of this getting embedded into the economy, the reality is you want to be invested appropriately so that you're able to maximize your return and make sure that you have a little bit of that something someday. A lot of people, Flavius, a frequent viewer here on the program, is talking about stagflation. Is that what we're actually running the risk of in this environment? Do you fear stagflation, Rob?
Yeah, I think that's what was signaled today. You also had consumer sentiment data coming in negatively. You could potentially have earnings growth in certain sectors, but really just because of inflation and just because of nominal growth in the economy, but you know, real growth in the economy not delivering.
Yeah. I think that one of the things that people need to remember too is that there is a way to sort of, and I hate to use the word play the market because it's not my style and it's not your style. I think we're sort of very sensible in our approach. So it's not like you're in and out. I often point out, hey, you're going to have to pay the tax on that anyway. So you don't want to go in and out too quickly, right? And make all this money and have to pay your taxes. But you want that opportunity to compound over time and to really have a few years. But a lot of investors, including so many that are watching this show right now, are saying, but wait a second, like I want to retire in 5 years. Like I can't take on risk in the equity markets. What do you say to that? I mean, we actually have portfolios set up specifically for folks like that, but I'll let you walk them through it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you have to think there's different kinds of risks, right? And when you think about inflation, there's risk of erosion of your purchasing power. So certainly if you own shorter dated fixed income investments, you have less risk of rising rates. But I think, you know, people sometimes underestimate when they kind of think about retirement or they're entering in retirement or in retirement, really just how long they need that money to last. And in the context of like longer term inflation, you are going to want to have that participation and growth that, you know, a diversified approach to equities can offer you, to stocks. So don't underestimate the importance of growth, particularly if we are in a high inflation environment where, bonds as fixed income investments, they don't participate in the nominal growth in the economy. Your returns are flat, whereas you own dividend stocks, you own inflation sensitive stocks, they will grow even if, you know, they're not necessarily growing in real terms, they'll grow in nominal terms. Trisha,
go ahead.
An interesting concept is that's unfortunately coming to the fore now is this idea of fiscal dominance, which is this idea that really, you know, we've taken on so much debt as a country following the pandemic that the Fed, the authorities, they need to generate nominal growth in incomes and assets just to kind of service our debt and to pay these interest costs, particularly with higher interest rates. So that's sort of a theory that's always really been applied more to emerging market countries. And now, sadly, you know, we're kind of maybe in more ways than one turning into an emerging market country where, you know, we're characterized by high interest rates, and this position of fiscal dominance where, you know, the central bank actually has to generate nominal growth in assets and incomes.
I hear you. And it's pretty concerning in more ways than one. I mean, you look at the political situation, obviously it feels very emerging market-esque, very banana republic-esque. One of the folks here watching is making the point that, and this is interesting, especially to you, that maybe Lockheed Martin is the one that you want to invest in. Rob, I've showed the viewers a chart of Lockheed Martin. It's amazing, right? You and I were looking at this together. Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, like these things were left for dead. And then all of a sudden, 2014 comes along, the Maiden Revolution. We put a CIA op into Ukraine. All of a sudden, there's spending that's going into these companies that hadn't been there before. And what do you know? They rallied. They rallied really significantly. In fact, so significantly that I believe they outpaced actually where the S&P was, which is tremendous because the S&P is filled with tech companies, et cetera. And so that was really remarkable to me. I guess, what's your view on sort of this military complex right now, given that there's this idea that we're going to keep spending on these never-ending wars.
Yeah, well, what's interesting, too, is that all the kids now on college campuses are specifically targeting for divestment stocks like Lockheed Martin and others because of because they do business with Israel, right? I don't think those moves, for various reasons that we've been talking about, you know, are really going to go anywhere. But yeah, if you have a view that we're going to be in really a sustained, I mean, it seems pretty clear that, you know, that I was actually listening to a call recently on Lockheed, and, you know, they were talking about their backlog. So, you know, that business is not falling apart anytime soon. I'm not offering a recommendation here. But, you know, one of the interesting.
It's an interesting one to look at. I hear for reasons that, you know, maybe we wish were not entirely the case. There's also perhaps some interesting newcomers to the market. You and I were talking recently, there was an article that went around about the sort of the VC money going into some of the new technology plays, and those aren't necessarily part of the public market yet, but I would imagine, and J.D. Vance has actually talked about this in an interesting op-ed in the Wall Street Journal recently, J.D. Vance, the senator from Ohio, that some people think could actually be the vice president on the GOP ticket. He's talked about the need for freshening up, if you would, our arsenal, so to speak, so that we're not sort of in a secondary position to China and some other nations. So perhaps in the future, there will be more opportunity in that space. Kind of a weird thing to talk about, but nonetheless,
you know,
reality.
Church, it also feeds back into the inflation point. I mean, governments all around the world are going to be spending more and more money on defense and build up and running up their deficits and running up their public debt loads. So it circles back to this idea of, you know, printing money to cover your interest costs. You know, it's a variable people are pointing to with, you know, big buildups in military spending, including in the U.S.
Yeah. Well, I just want to, again, give a plug for 76 Research, 76research.com. I encourage everybody to go there to subscribe, at least to the 76 report. It's $9.95 a month. And by the way, the great thing about that is you get all the back stock picks as well. So that's actually very worthwhile. You can look at the stock pick we were just talking about that's up nearly 14% since we decided to make this call. And then, of course, the model portfolios, which give you a larger base of picks. There are 10 to 15 stock picks. Rob, always good to see you. I'll talk to you soon, but thanks for taking the time with the viewers today. We appreciate it.
All right, great. See you.
So turning back to all that's happening on the college campuses right now, all across the nation right now, we have problems. But the epicenter, if you would, is none other than my alma mater, Columbia University, where you see, let's go back to that video of Hamilton Hall. It's just unbelievable. They're breaking windows, guys. They're breaking windows. And, you know, this scene that's playing out, it's actually causing a lot of discord, interestingly, in newsrooms across America right now. Specifically, one in particular that I'm going to get to, because it's almost like some people are siding with the pro-Palestinian protesters and the other people are not. Let's take a quick look at, is it CBS, the morning show, where Gayle King, you know, Oprah's friend, is very clear that these are protesters. They're just war protesters.
Now to breaking news overnight, a major escalation in the protest at Columbia University, where demonstrators against the war in Gaza have now broken into a building on campus.
Okay, did you hear that?
Banner renaming
Hamilton war protesters.
Hall
How did we go from
who was killed in Gaza,
Hamas then, or Gaza supporting protesters to they're just war protesters? Oh, it's all fine. It's all fine. It's totally peaceful. Well, that totally peaceful narrative really isn't playing out. Can we go back to the smashing of the windows, please? You look at this video. You tell me if there is anything peaceful about what is going on. You tell me when you hear to the river, from the river to the sea. Is there anything peaceful about that? No, because that actually stands for the annihilation of the Jewish people. That stands for genocide. And don't tell me these kids are so stupid. They're all at Ivy Leagues, thank you very much. And I know what we think about the Ivies, but I'm sorry. They're not total idiots. They know exactly what it means. So this came up on Morning Joe today. And I'm going to show you how Joe and Mika are talking about it with Richard Haass, who's head of the CFR, Council on Foreign Relations, along with Mr. Greenblatt. Everybody's talking about this, and they're sounding very different than, how shall we say, the primetime hosts like Joy Reid. Watch.
Well, they're adults, and go ahead.
I was just going to say, this is it's one half about the student. It's also about, Mika, these authorities and the lack of them. Okay. Why are these school administrators, why are they abdicating their responsibility to this degree? And this affects students, it affects outsiders, it affects teachers with tenure. The last I checked, tenure is supposed to give you intellectual protection so you can say things in classrooms. It doesn't, it seems to me, give you the ability to break the law with impunity. Mm-hmm. And I just don't understand what's... And you see also the difference on the campuses between what's happening on some, Chicago and Florida, as opposed to what's happening at Columbia and others. There's an enormous gap in the principle and backbone we're seeing here.
Well, Richard, to your point, I think that's the place we've all been sitting in watching this, going, what the hell is going on? What are these universities doing? Why aren't they doing something? And I'll echo the horror that this does look like January 6th. What a terrible example for our students. At the same time, these
are you had
adults,
me, Mika, until
the question
that.
Is, why do you
But no, I
choose?
Mean, she's trying to make the point that this is not good, right? And in her world, you know, January 6th was a really awful thing. And so, like, this is not good. And I agree with her. This is not good. What we're seeing on college campuses right now is really concerning. And thank goodness I don't have a kid on a college campus right now. Thank goodness I'm not on a college campus right now. I can't even imagine. Like, basically, you pay $67,000, and guess what? Guess what? You don't even get to go to class right now. $70,000 a year in tuition, and you're not even able to go to class there at Columbia University. So Columbia, clearly kind of the epicenter of problems. And, like, by the way, like, every politician is parachuting into Columbia. I mean, do we have the video of Ilhan Omar, who said some rather inappropriate things? Well, we'll hang on that for a second. I'm going to show you that in a second. Before I do, I got to first show you Joy Reid, because you heard from Mika. You heard how she feels. Like, she's obviously very concerned. Just remember, this is MSNBC, right? This is exposing a division, shall we say, not just within the network, but also within the Democrat Party. Because a lot of people of color, they would say, feel differently. Here is Joy Reid telling you it's just one big kumbaya session at these college campuses right now.
I saw, Mark, these students singing and singing about peace and singing salam, singing words of peace. So it just didn't square with what I was even hearing on television and television commentators saying was shrieking anti-Semitism. I didn't hear it.
No, I was there yesterday, and it was very peaceful and very moving. One of the institutions affiliated with Columbia, of course, is Union Theological Seminary, and the Union students held a Sunday worship service and served communion there on the campus, even to those beyond the gates who couldn't get in. So this betrays the imagery of there being violent rhetoric spewed. I will say this. I do have a colleague whose daughter is a freshman at Barnard, and she has faced some harassment. But as Mariam said, these are outliers. And in the movement, we've always had a
It happened at Black Lives Matter rally.
Yeah, you've got provocateurs.
Yeah.
So that's, but in general, it's not a good idea to generalize what's going on. These are peaceful and nonviolent demonstrations.
Let me, what do you make of the leaders of your school seeming, I guess, to appease maybe members of Congress that have been all over your president and wanted to resign, calling the NYPD on you all?
It feels like it's been a McCarthyite campaign to try to equate our peaceful protest calling for them to divest from violence, and then they're calling us violent instead. It was absolutely horrifying to be carried out in zip ties when we were, you know, just peacefully calling for an end to the violence.
Oh, my goodness, right? I wasn't kidding, right, when I told you that they were talking about singing Kumbaya. She actually said, oh, and they were singing. And then he talks about they're handing out communion and, oh, it's just one big joy fest. If it's so joyful joy, then why did they have to shut down classes? Why are they breaking windows? Why are they taking over buildings? And by the way, why the heck is the president of the university not doing anything about it? Right? It's like the bedtime hour. I loved it. Jesse Waters actually said this on The Five yesterday. He said, you know, in our house, when we say you're done and it's bedtime, it's over. There's no more Paw Patrol. Okay? The Paw Patrol goes off. That was great. You know what? End the Paw Patrol. Turn off the TV. Turn off the computer. Turn them off and turn off their degrees. Expel the students that are disrupting the peace. Arrest the students that are disrupting the peace. For goodness sakes, they're not even showing their faces in many cases. I mean, how pathetic is that, ladies and gentlemen, that they're not even showing their faces? Ilhan Omar making the pilgrimage to Columbia University. Again, all of them are filtering through. You've had Chuck Schumer there. You've had Mike Johnson there. And of course, AOC went. She's siding with the protesters. Surprise, surprise. And then Ilhan Omar. And what she said, frankly, is pretty irreprehensible. Listen.
I think this will translate to the Jewish students who are facing anti-Semitism here on campus.
So I actually met a lot of Jewish students that are in the encampment. And I think it is really unfortunate that people don't care about the fact that all Jewish kids should be kept safe and that we should not have to tolerate anti-Semitism or bigotry for all Jewish students, whether they are pro-genocide or anti-genocide. Daniel.
Okay, you heard that? Whether they are pro-genocide or anti-genocide. Unbelievable. Even members of her own party today calling her out. Representative Aguilar pointing out, that's not how I would say it. No, that's frankly how no member of Congress that believes in the United States of America, and I know sometimes we have our doubts about her. Uh-huh. Should ever talk about it. Let's go to Representative Aguilar.
It's not the language I would have chosen. It's not something I would have said. And as I mentioned previously, I think we all have an obligation to turn the temperature down, especially when we're in those positions where people are listening to us and when we're speaking to people who feel passionate about issues. We do that in our own offices. We do that in our districts, you know, every week. Every month. That's important, but it's not language I would use.
No, not language I would use. I mean, you have a responsibility to kind of get the temperature in a better place, and yet she's doing exactly the opposite. She's actually utilizing this as an opportunity. For what, I ask? For what? I mean, I actually think, once again, this helps Donald Trump, because Americans don't like what they see. They don't like the chaos, the threat of violence. They want some law and order. Yeah, I said the words. They want law and order. They want to know if they spent $70,000 for their child to go to school on campus that they're actually going to be able to attend the classes. Representative Ted Lieu coming out against the students, against the protesters. Again, another Democrat saying it's never okay to go out and break windows. He's right.
You have the absolute right to free speech in America. You can protest, but the First Amendment does not give you the right to break windows, to vandalize buildings, to take over private buildings, and to make students who happen to be of Jewish descent feel unsafe. Those things are not protected by the First Amendment. And so the folks who are protesting need to understand that line. And when they cross that line, then universities have every right to take action against those students.
Yeah, he's absolutely right. So we're waiting. Apparently, Columbia is trying to negotiate with these students. I don't know how you negotiate with them. I mean, this is like Obama and the red line in Syria all over again, right? I mean, I don't want to quite make that kind of a contrast, but in terms of negotiating skills, let's face it, the woman, originally from Egypt, moved here when she was 5 years old, educated in Western universities, an economist. She is in way over her head, like way over her skis. For whatever reason, she's not making the right decisions here. And I'm just seeing if I can get you any kind of update right now. Of course, we learned that some of the students at Princeton have actually been expelled. And that's not actually the case. I mean, Princeton being very sort of forthright in what they said. You heard Rob talking about it earlier. But as a Princeton grad, I think he's proud to see that there's actually been some sort of follow through. The Princeton community was addressed here in this post by the university president, who wrote that the six students, actually five undergrads and six graduate students, one postdoctoral researcher and one person not affiliated with the university, was caught in an incident, and 13 people were arrested. Those that were arrested are now looking at possible suspension and expulsion. I mean, that's how you deal with it. And for whatever reason, Columbia is not able to follow through, which is just amazing, amazing. Look, this is going to have serious consequences. I mean, it's like 1968 all over again. What we're going to go into the DNC meetings this summer, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see a whole lot more. I mean, this is like a practice drill. This is a practice run. They get the tent cities out there. They're chanting all of this stuff, and it's taking on a life of its own, which, while we all believe in freedom of speech, believe me, there's no one who's more passionate about that than me. You cross a line when you're starting to intimidate everybody else who doesn't look like you or is not as angry as you, and you're crossing a line when you start breaking those windows, as they did at Columbia last night. No excuses for this. You know what else there are no excuses for? The inflation we have in our economy, the border that we are somehow not enforcing, the inability to kind of confront these international issues in a way that's actually productive, and our healthcare situation. Do you know that of the wealthiest countries in the world, we rank 38th in terms of our healthcare? We got lousy healthcare, right? Considering all the money we have, considering that we are still the United States of America, we get really lousy healthcare. Thank you very much, Obama and Obamacare and insurance companies, right? And the big hospitals that are all getting rolled up, and they say they're nonprofit, but I'm sorry. Look, there's a lot of things wrong with this. A lot of things wrong with this. So I sat down just yesterday. I'm still here. We can talk about the interview as we're watching it in real time. I sat down with Lauren Stewart, who is like, wow, like super smart on healthcare. And she is leading an effort to totally redo because you could keep what you have. You want your Obamacare plan, go for it, right? But she would like to see, and this is why it's so important that we see, conservative values represented in Washington, in the Oval Office, in the Senate, and in Congress. We want that because we want new things, new ideas that look out for the individual instead of the big insurance companies, instead of the big hospitals. That's what we need, America. You know how crazy health insurance costs are. They keep going up, up, and away, kind of like college tuition, right? Huh, funny. And you see what happens on colleges. The kids are like clearly not valuing their education. And what happens with Americans' healthcare? Well, it's continued to deteriorate. Lauren Stewart, I'm just so happy that she was able to join us because this is a meaningful conversation. Let's watch. Lauren, great to have you. Thank you so much for being here. Look, this is such an important issue right now. I was looking at some statistics. We talk about inflation all the time, but it's incredible because from 2014, we're looking at the average deductible in healthcare being up, what, some 60%. I mean, this is really just outrageous. Like, this is inflation on steroids. And I look at this and I go, like, why? Like, what is going on?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, the president talks a lot about healthcare, and what he's attempting to do is to rewrite his record on healthcare for two reasons. Number one, a lot of his failed policies are at the core of many of the problems in our American healthcare system. And number two, there's an election coming up and healthcare is a top issue for key voter demographics, especially suburban women. So the president will talk about how many millions of Americans have insurance under the Affordable Care Act. But the problem at the core here is that health insurance does not mean that you have real access to quality healthcare. So here's the real perspective of healthcare in America. 80% of Americans say that they feel trapped in their healthcare and they want more options. All the while, President Biden is doing things like slashing Medicare Advantage programs that many seniors loved and opted into, and working to permanently eliminate short-term health insurance plans that many young people find to best fit their lifestyle. The president's record on healthcare is the problem in healthcare, and it's nothing he should be boasting about.
No, I don't think he's got a lot to boast about, honestly, right now.
Yeah.
And you don't have to take my word for that. I mean, just look at the latest polls, for goodness sakes, or the approval ratings. But, you know, people have talked about how do we find a solution for this? Because the reality is it is way outpaced. I mean, inflation is high, right, for everything. But healthcare inflation specifically has been so much worse, perhaps because of all this government control. I know that you're coming up with what you call the personal option. By the way, people can check it out at personaloption.com. Go to personaloption.com. AFP is all over this. Lauren's all over this. But there's ideas there to make this something different. I think a lot of people have tried it, right? I think back to the Mitt Romney days, and that didn't really work. You look at Obamacare, people are really unhappy with Obamacare. Mm. Biden's coming up with something else. But there is a conservative version that would put more power, if you would, in the hands of the individuals so that they can make their own decisions about healthcare, and in doing so, help drive costs down?
Yeah, absolutely. So as with anything in healthcare, there is a golden rule. He who has the gold makes the rules. In the American healthcare system right now, the insurance companies have the gold. They control the vast majority of dollars spent on healthcare in our country. They can decide when, where, how, and when you cannot spend those dollars on healthcare. Now, healthcare expenses for any family are the most personal dollars you're going to spend. It's your well-being of you and your family. And if we wanted to drive better health outcomes in that space, we would allow patients and families to control more of the money they're spending on their healthcare. We need to be more focused from a policy standpoint, from a solution standpoint, on funding and empowering patients, not the system.
Yeah, I think people agree with you. I mean, I just look at the comments that I get from viewers all the time, and they're like, oh my gosh, you know, you wouldn't believe how much I'm paying now for my insurance.
Awful.
And so the insurance bills are high. And then that's, you know, if you can get what you need out of your insurance, because even then there are more sort of additional problems. There's a couple of pieces of legislation. I think Pete Sessions has one. You've got Stubbe has one. I mean, you know, people are talking about this. Kat Kamik has one. I mean, we've got to have, I think, innovation in this space. You look at all the innovation out there.
Yes.
I mean, it's incredible, right? With technology and everything. Like, it's just incredible what we're capable of. Now, so it's sort of like, how can we not fix this? How can, this is something so basic.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and the landscape is really different with this. You know, the president and Democrats have been running on healthcare for years unchecked, but it's these policy solutions, the one that you mentioned from Congressman Pete Sessions, the Access Act from Congressman Stubbe and Congresswoman Kamik are a big deal. For instance, the Healthcare Fairness for All Act creates much needed parity in the healthcare system. This bill would allow all Americans to have access to an incredible health benefit called a health savings account. Similar to a 401k, the health savings account allows you to put away pre-tax dollars to use for qualified medical expenses. Under this legislation, families would be able to put away $4,000 per adult and $2,000 per child each year. That's $12,000 of tax.
And they can use it at any time in the future?
Yes, they can save it. They can use it for their future health needs. They can use it for prescriptions, over-the-counter medicines like allergy medicines, which I'm in Washington, D.C. right now, so I'm spending a lot of money on that.
Those cherry trees will get you, yeah.
Yeah, and additionally, and this is kind of one of the best benefits of a health savings account, is it allows to see the doctors that you want, regardless of your network, whether it's an amazing network or a shrinking insurance network like the ACA. You can use a health savings account to pay to go see whatever doctor you would like.
What would this mean for the insurance companies? Are they fighting this?
So there's a number of components, right? There's been a lack of competition in healthcare that has driven up the cost for American patients and families. Why is that? Well, that's number one, because it's made generic drugs a lot more difficult to come to market. That drives up the cost of medicine. It's also fueled massive hospital consolidation by encouraging hospital monopolies. So at the end of the day, we would be shifting the dollars in healthcare away from the control of insurance companies and back to patients and their families.
Isn't that what we want, right? Like, that is so absolutely what we want. And I bet you talk to any doctor, and that's what the doctors want too.
Absolutely. Doctors, you know, are increasingly more frustrated with the amount of time they're able to spend with their patients. There are really neat innovations out there, such as direct primary care, concierge care services that doctors absolutely love. But the incentives are off in the healthcare market, and doctors, providers, and especially patients are trapped in the crossfire.
Gosh. So what can people do? I mean, the first thing I would advise them to do is go check out all the information you guys have on personaloption.com. I say yes all the time that we have to be our own advocate. We have to push our lawmakers.
Absolutely.
We have to, you know, you have to vote, and you have to vote for the right policies. Don't tell me people are, oh, you know, policy, it's boring. It's, you know, look, this is the stuff that
yes
changes our world. And so, I mean, kind of love it for that reason, but it's, you gotta kind of sink your teeth in. And I think demand of all of our representatives to get behind something that's different, because it's not sustainable this way.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say the biggest thing that people can do is, number one, know that it doesn't have to be this way. You know, we have the personal option, which is our legislative agenda, which is our outlook on healthcare in America, that all Americans should have a personal option in their healthcare. Know that that's something that's out there. And the only reason that we aren't there right now is because the government and failed policies under President Biden have put in roadblocks and barriers to that. Additionally, I think we should be tuning up to the fact that the landscape of who can win the healthcare issue in 2024 is extremely different this year. When we talk about policy solutions, real policy solutions in healthcare that are Republican-led, such as the Access Act, such as the Healthcare Fairness for All Act, that significantly challenges the status quo in healthcare that most of America is unsatisfied with right now. So it's something we should all be talking a lot more about, and something Americans can quite frankly get excited for.
Yeah, no, for sure. So let me ask you this. I mean, look, not everybody's going to have the means. Not everybody is going to have the HSA. I know that I think you said only 10%. I was looking in some of your research of Americans actually have this HSA access right now. So hopefully that all changes. But, you know, suppose you're on the very bottom tier, and life is very much day to day and very, very challenging. And you know, maybe you don't have the kind of ability to even access some of these better options. What happens to those people?
Absolutely. And we're feeling that more than ever right now, right? Under massive inflation that we've never seen before. Those people that I think of immediately come to mind when I talk about the Access Act by Congressman Stubbe and Congresswoman Kamik. This bill affects the lowest level of income of people on Obamacare. It would allow them to take a portion of their subsidy. So we're already subsidizing their health care. It would allow them to take a portion of that subsidy in the form of an HSA, in the form of a health savings account. Okay. What this does is it combats the problem that we have providers leaving the marketplace more and more every year. So it would give them much more access and choice in their health care, but it would also empower them to make decisions about what their need for their health care, what their family needs versus just what's in their shrinking network. Now, that's all well and good. We're funding patients through HSAs and Obamacare, but even more, and even more importantly for what's upcoming with the fiscal cliff, and, you know, as a fiscal conservative myself, this bill saves taxpayers $30 billion over the first 10 years. You might say, why? How is that? We're still subsidizing these lower income folks' healthcare, but it's because we're directing those funds directly to the patient and removing the insurance as the middleman, thus managing the subsidy even more efficiently. And, you know, we at AFP love this legislation because it expands healthcare options for lower income people. But we've also done national polling on it as well and found 82% of Americans support the Access Act.
Yeah, look, I mean, people want to be in control of their future and their destiny.
Absolutely.
And yeah, their healthcare, no matter their income level. Like that is, it's kind of basic.
Yes.
So listen, I we should stay on this. I should talk to you some more. I think this is a really important issue and one that we have some opportunity on as fiscal
Absolutely.
Conservatives, right? To kind of do the right thing going forward. Thank you so much for your time, Lauren. Great to have you here again. Lauren Stewart, Senior Federal Affairs Liaison at Americans for Prosperity. Go to personaloption.com. Check out her work there and we'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Okay, my thanks to Lauren. You know, I was talking to some of you guys in the chat and it was really interesting because we were obviously in agreement that healthcare is obviously completely broken. And a lot of that is the onus on the individual too, because people are not taking good enough care of themselves. And suddenly it's in vogue, right? To not take care of yourselves. I mean, when the Victoria's Secret catalog arrives and you get the plus size models, I mean, I'm sorry, it's just not healthy. I know somebody's going to take issue with that, but you know what? It's not healthy. I want to get momentarily to some incredible sound that just came in from the Vice President of the United States. And I want to compare and contrast that sound of Kamala Harris talking about how she wants to pay for everybody's college education, right? Student loan forgiveness for all. She wants to put forward a ton of money into this. She thinks it's the right thing to do. Just as we get more sound that just came to us from Columbia University of students now demanding free food as they take over Hamilton Hall. I mean, come on. I'm sorry. Like, they're complete Marxists, it sounds like, at this point. But before I do, another big story. Just out today, moments ago, we learned that the administration is looking to deschedule marijuana as a class one serious drug. In a historic shift, reports AP, the U.S. moves to reclassify marijuana as a less dangerous drug. And this is coming in now from a variety of sources. And I'm just going to say, I predicted this maybe 14 years ago. I wrote a book called Joint Ventures, pun intended, inside the industry, inside the underground industry of the marijuana business. Because back in the day, there was a place I visited called the Emerald Triangle up in Northern California. And it was a big trade there, like big business. And then I did a sequel. I did a documentary for CNBC. I wrote a book. And then I went on to Colorado, where they were growing this in massive, massive amounts. And it's kind of ironic because I'm, as you can probably tell, not really much into this stuff, other than was really fascinated at how it had evolved into this underground business. And it was because they didn't have it as any kind of legal means. And now increasingly in states across the country, they've legalized it. I think this is quite interesting and quite political, what's actually happening in this moment in time. In other words, Joe Biden is really, really like sucking wind. I mean, like his poll numbers are so bad and there's nothing they can do to help him right now. Like they're not going to improve the economy. Young people are all mad at him. So the only two avenues he has is maybe, okay, let me like get them all excited. I'm going to give them a promise of paying back their student loans. So that's one thing. Oh, and let me declassify marijuana. We'll just make it, you know, as easy as having a beer. It's very, very interesting. I mean, it's very political. If you look at one of these quotes here, I think this is from the AP article. It comes after President Joe Biden called for the review of a federal marijuana law in October of 22 and moved to pardon thousands of Americans. Interesting timing. October of 22, like, you know, a month before midterms. Just saying. As well as pardoning thousands of Americans convicted federally of simple possession of the drug. He has also called on governors and local leaders to take similar steps to erase marijuana convictions. Quote, criminal records for marijuana use and possession have imposed needless barriers to employment, housing, and educational opportunities. Biden said back in December, too many lives have been upended because of our failed approach to marijuana. It's time that we right these wrongs. I mean, I don't know. Last time I was in New York City, I got the kids asking me, like, They have skunks in New York, Mom? Oh, no, that's just out in the country that we have the skunks, right? But somehow I had to go with, yeah, you know, there's skunks in New York, too. What are you going to say? No, actually, I told them the truth. I told them what it was. And it's bad. Like, it's really bad when you're walking down the streets in New York City, and this is what you're smelling right now. And now, for political reasons only, Joe Biden is making this decision. It's not for anything other than sheer political reasons that it's happening right now. Very interesting to me. I mean, it comes along at the same time when he's saying, I wanted to ban menthol cigarettes. But it turns out his advisors told him, you know, the menthol cigarettes are really popular with the Black community. And you're not doing very well. You're down 20 points and falling in the Black community. So maybe don't ban the menthol cigarettes right around now. So this is the other move. We're gonna legalize marijuana. We're gonna reclassify it. No longer gonna be a dangerous drug, but and we're gonna go easy on the menthol cigarettes too. I mean, it's pure politics. I want to show you an article that Drew actually found, because this is a big issue in Florida, and Florida is, you know, gonna be hotly contested territory, and they can't get young people excited about anything. So they're hoping that maybe this one works. Florida Democrats hope abortion and marijuana questions draw young voters despite low enthusiasm. In other words, nobody has any enthusiasm for politics right now, certainly not for Joe Biden. Why would they? So then maybe if we just promise them legal marijuana, you know, maybe that'll get them to the poll. Or we promise them gimme other giveaways, right? As in, we'll pay back your student loans. Look, I mean, he tried. It didn't work. The Supreme Court told him it's not going to work. And yet they're still at it. Moments ago, Kamala Harris, the vice president of the United States, clearly not respecting the Supreme Court, getting out there saying, oh, yeah, we need to do this. We need to pay off people's student loans for them. Forget any individual responsibility. Drew, do we have this? I want to go to it.
And what we have seen, we have now forgiven over $150 billion in student loan debt. On average, we're looking at somewhere around $70,000 per person. And especially if we're talking about people in public service, nurses, firefighters, teachers, and doubling the number for them. But one of the other things I'd ask the leaders here in terms of helping me get the word out, let people know they qualify for student loan debt even if they never graduated.
Didn't have to graduate to get the student loan debt relief. I mean, forget about the fact that, you know, poor Joe Schmo over there, who was working three jobs and trying to put his kid through school, or better yet, how about Joe Schmo or Jill Schmo, who said, I can't afford to go to school. I'm going to go and start a business and work my tail off and have another job to help me support that business that I'm starting. And now I get to pay? For you to have just hung out and maybe protested on college campuses? If I have to pay for you to have had a good time? I'm sorry, that is not how America works. Listen, I'm not going to argue that inflation is out of control, is not out of control when it comes to education costs. It is, all right? It is. And it is out of control for one reason and one reason only, ladies and gentlemen. I'll tell you why. Because the federal government can't get its hand out of there. They're the ones offering the Pell Grants. They're the ones with all the loans. They're the ones offering this, that, and the other. And when you give out so many freebies, what do you do? It's like the M2 money supply, right? That's gone up 40%. During the COVID years, you flood the market with dollars. And when you flood the market with dollars, you're going to need more and more and more dollars in order to pull it off. So this is a problem. And these kids, they don't get it. In fact, there's one student that was just quoted moments ago over at Columbia University. And this particular student who has joined in the fun, shall we say, of taking over, breaking windows and taking over Hamilton Hall, which they now want renamed for somebody who was killed in Gaza, Hale Hall, I believe it is. Do we have that video, Drew? You can see these kids there. Hale Hall, they're now naming it. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, thank you for that. You've got the kids dropping down their new sign. Forgive me, it's Hins Hall. So... These students that have now taken over Hamilton Hall, trying to rename it. Well, apparently that's not it. They want more because it's give me, give me, give me, give me. There's no sense of reality, no sense that money costs anything. It's all just there for them to take. I want you to see this young woman on campus, my alma mater, Columbia University. She's part of the crew that's taken over Hamilton Hall, and she wants more.
Why should the university be obligated to provide food to people who have taken over a building?
Well, first of all, we're saying that they're obligated to provide food to students who pay for a meal plan here.
But you mentioned that there was a request that food and water be brought in, unless I misunderstood.
To allow it to be brought in. I mean, well, I guess it's ultimately a question of what kind of community and obligation Columbia feels it has to its students. Do you want students to die of dehydration and starvation or get severely ill, even if they disagree with you? If the answer is no, then you should allow basic, I mean, it's crazy to say because we're on an Ivy League campus, but this is like basic humanitarian aid we're asking for. Like, could people please have a glass of water?
But they did put themselves in that very deliberately in that situation and in that position. So it seems like you're sort of saying, we want to be revolutionaries. We want to take up this building. Now would you please bring us food and water?
Nobody's asking them to bring anything. We're asking them to not violently stop us from bringing in basic humanitarian aid.
They're stopping the delivery of food?
We are looking for a commitment from them that they will not stop it violently.
But they haven't stopped it.
I don't know to what extent it has been attempted, but we're looking for a commitment.
And the Grubhub.
They're looking for a commitment from the university to bring the food and water in. They chose to take over the hall illegally. And yet these students, who theoretically should be smart enough, I don't know, did they get rid of the SAT at Columbia? Clearly that whole experiment didn't go so well. Seems like you better reinstitute the test, guys, at every university like yesterday. So they go and take over the hall. And now they're mad because they don't have food and water and they don't want to leave. So they're in there and they're demanding food and water. And they're saying, well, we've paid for it anyway. It's part of our tuition. I'm sorry. This is what us taxpayers have to somehow support. Kamala Harris and Joe Biden want you to help support her as she protests. I don't know if she specifically was responsible for the broken windows, but she's clearly part of the team. And I think Americans are going to look at this, especially come November 2024, and they're not going to forget. This is not who we are. Things have gone too far. And this all, once again, plays in Donald Trump's favor. Pure and simple. Not that hard. I want to thank you all for being here. Make sure, go check out the gold deal I just told you about. Make sure you go check out thepersonaloption.com. And most importantly, you heard from Rob today, go check out our model portfolios at 76research.com. It's great to have you all. I will see you back here live again tomorrow. Until then, take care.